Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast 63 for March 14, 2011. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Coming up later in the podcast, we have Scott Rakowski will tell us about iVote. It allows people to vote over the phone or online. People must meet one of four different requirements. You must be blind or unable to travel and get to the poll. You must be more than 20 kilometers, which translates to about 12 miles from an actual polling place, or be currently outside of Australia plus one other criteria. I don't recall at this time. But persons must write down their 12-digit confirmation number and then log in after the election to ensure that your vote was actually cast. And if it wasn't counted, failure to do so, either to confirm that your vote was counted or just not voting at all in Australia, Ricky, can cost you a fine of $150.
Wow, really?
It's weird because, right, you know, you have the right to vote, but you don't have the right not to vote.
That's very interesting. I think, obviously, a lot more people would vote here if we instituted that sort of thing, but you couldn't really exercise your right to say, hey, I don't like anybody. I don't want to be a part of this at the moment.
Well, exactly. And as we look for ways to raise revenues, why didn't they think of that in here, U.S.? How do you feel about that? Which method would you prefer? Or would you feel comfortable with that?
I think I'd be fine with it. Either phone or internet would be okay with me.
Please select one of the following options. iVote registrations close on the 23rd of March. To register for iVote, please press 1. Or to practice using iVote by phone, press 3. If you need help with iVote, press 4. If you have a general voting inquiry, please press 5.
Yeah, they say your data is encrypted, so they really don't know who you voted for, just the fact that you did vote. So I'll be very curious to see how that works. And, of course, anyone tampering with it, imprisonment for you. So we'll hear that coming up. Also, Mike Cowell gives us a review of not four, not five, but six speakers, both Bluetooth and wired. Well, into the big news stories. We'll start with Apple. They've announced the iPad 2. And it's a dual-core processor with the same 9.7-inch screen, but better graphics, the same 10-hour battery life, although I understand it is actually reduced a little bit. Walt Malsberg, a very respected journalist writing for Wall Street Journal and other publications, did a very thorough review of it. Of course, it has front and rear-facing cameras.
Neither of which they will release specs for, Yeah, we don't know how many megapixels that is.
Yeah, so it's one-third thinner and about 3 ounces lighter, coming in at 1.33 pounds. So Walt kind of concludes that if you already own one, the original iPad, maybe it's not really worth the upgrade. So the original iPad has sold 15 million units. Base price for the new one's $499, going up to as much as $829, depending on how you configure your device, what you want in it.
Yeah, you can get 3G for AT&T or Verizon. You can obviously get various capacities from 16 to 64, I believe, and all sorts of cool stuff. But yeah, he says not to necessarily rush out and buy one if you already have the first generation, but he does believe that it crashes a lot less than all of the Android tablets that he's played with, and I think he still feels that for a tablet, the iPad is currently the winner.
Yeah, of course, you have 350,000 apps with 65,000 specifically tuned for the iPad. The apps launch a little quicker. Maybe it'll be worth it. And of course, you can read the full review along with links to all other stories we talk about over at Serotalk.com, baby. An update to Apple TV will allow live streaming of Major League Baseball as well as NBA games. Version 4.2 of the software also supports AirPlay. And this allows wireless streaming of video from your other iOS apps as well as Safari. from the iPad or iPhone or even iPod Touch. And you can also watch Netflix now with Dolby 5.1 surround sound. How cool is that?
Very cool. I don't have one of these, but it looks like a pretty nicely updated feature set. I know a lot of people were jumping up and down about the new streaming sports, and I, for one, would love to watch Netflix in 5.1. Right now, I'm either watching it on my iPhone or my TV, which isn't hooked up to a bunch of speakers, or just from my machine, none of which are 5.1.
That's right. The on-screen keyboard has also been improved for security enhancements and easier to get your passwords in there. But also released on March 9th was iOS 4.3, just to confuse you folks. Ricky, have you played with the 4.3?
Yeah, I have. Not extensively. I don't notice a whole lot of differences. There is a sort of unofficial change log that was put together by Kevin Chow, and you can check that out at the show notes. One significant difference is that the four-finger swipe up or down, which used to be used to move to the first or last element on the page, has now been changed. You'll do a four-finger tap near the top of the screen or the bottom of the screen to move to first or last element. We still have the issue of speech rates at, say, between 90 and 100%, at least on U.S. voices. There are certain letters that are sort of cut off and choppy at those speeds, so that hasn't been addressed yet. But I haven't noticed any problems with the update, so that's good.
I understand there's some kind of drill sound effect to let you know when you power down, right? So that would be handy when you're on the plane and you just want to make sure that the thing did actually shut off.
Right.
The four-finger tap on the top and the bottom of the screen?
Right. So if you want to move to the first element, then you tap four fingers at the top. And if you want to move to the very last element without having to flick through the entire page or scroll or whatever, then you'll just four-finger tap at the bottom of the screen. And a lot of people are actually having a little difficulty with this gesture. Four fingers in general has seemed to sort of be a problem because if you have larger fingers, you may not be able to fit those on the screen well. And if you have a case, like I have a case which covers just a bit of the sides of the phone, and I still don't have any problem with the gesture, but I can see how some people might.
And two new iPhone apps worthy of talking about. First one, Money Reader, reads U.S. currency between $1 and $100 bills, and it only costs $1.99. Works on both the 3GS and 4G. Ricky, have you played with it?
I have, and it works quite nicely. You no longer need an iBill if you've got this thing. It's considerably less expensive, and you don't have to go through any sort of hoops as far as getting the thing focused, then taking a picture, then tapping somewhere. You just run the app, hold it about 10 inches above the bill, and you'll want to have the bill facing lengthwise. And as you hold it over the bill, it will identify the denomination. Very cool.
Yeah, so it works on both the 3GS and 4G, but a little better on the 4G, I guess because of the flash that compensates.
I think because of the flash, yeah.
So all you folks who went cheap on getting the 3GS for $49, unfortunately, one place you're going to pay for it is doing OCR under any circumstance. But the other app that's cool is Light Detector. It's a light probe, basically, for 99 cents. Yes. You played with that as well?
I have, and it's very interesting. It sounds pretty obnoxious, especially if you go into a very bright room. You get an extremely high-pitched noise, which is constant, that is indicating, hey, there's a very bright light here. And you can point it at things like monitors from across the room, and it will show that sort of low ambient glow from the monitor. And then if you're in a dark room, it will just have a much lower tone that is static. You know, it doesn't go up in pitch at all. And then as you walk around through the house trying to see, okay, are my lights still on? Is the monitor on? You can get immediate feedback as you walk by something as to whether it's lighted or not.
I want to know if it picks up lightning. That'll be interesting.
That's a really interesting idea, and I suspect we're going to get storms soon, so I may be able to test this, at least if I get outside before it starts raining. what's interesting to me is that it has taken a couple of years for this thing to come out. To me, that seems like something that would be very easy to do, and I'm surprised that we haven't seen it before now.
Adobe releases Flash to HTML conversion tool to support Apple's iOS. And I mean, what else can you say? If you can't beat them, convert them, I guess, right?
Yeah, there you go. You'll be able to convert material that was previously designed using Adobe Flash, and they'll be able to use them cross-platform in a way that they couldn't before, namely on Mac or iOS devices, because neither of them ship with Flash. Now, you can install Flash on the Mac, but it doesn't ship by default. Apple kind of said, we don't do this because, we want people to download the latest for security reasons and such. But it's well known that Steve Jobs is not at all fond of Flash and really has no intention of moving forward to support that. So what do you do if you have developed a lot of content using Flash and you really don't want to lock out these Apple platform users? Well, hey, if you can't beat them, convert them. Why not?
And Apple releases iTunes 10.21, not, of course, after first having 10.2, which was buggy, I guess, to say it nicely.
Broke. Yeah.
And neither one has fixed the issue. The F6 no longer works, the key to kind of switch between views. That be broken. So 10.21 is out. I guess it fixes some security issues and bugs they introduced in 10.2. So it certainly want to get 10.21 before upgrading your phone to 4.3. That would be my recommendation if you haven't done that. But speaking of security, apparently there's a new Mac Trojan called Black Hole Rat, and possibly from Germany, based on its mix of English and German. But it allows shell commands to be sent. You can do a restart, shutdown, or sleep command, and it can post messages on the victim's screen, and it can make specific links open in the browser, and it opens a window for fake passwords. So it looks like it could be a great tool for phishing. Of course, I'm out there saying, well, I'm not worried because Macs don't get viruses and Trojans, but actually they do.
Yeah, right. I think the old security through obscurity argument is really going away, especially when you see the same people who say, Macs don't get viruses, you know, nothing like that happens. Oh, but Macs are becoming super popular and more people are using them every day. So that argument doesn't work well. If you do have a Mac, there are a couple of options for you. There is the Sophos antivirus program, which, by the way, does currently have a fix for this Trojan that we've just spoken about. And the guys who make Nod32 on Windows, that's Esset, they have an antivirus suite for the Mac as well.
And I know, Ricky, someone in our own chat room has said, well, I use the Mac for torrents because it's safer, but they're saying this thing is probably spread through torrents. It's one of the primary vehicles. So if you're going to do torrents, you better have some kind of security software in place.
If you're going to have a computer, you better have some kind of antivirus. That's kind of my take.
Yes, you must, because otherwise you'll get a phone call, an automated phone call like I did from your ISP saying you're part of a botnet and your computer is sending emails and doing all kinds of mean and nasty things. And if you don't do something about it, we're going to suspend your service.
Ouch.
So, yeah. And unfortunately, when that happens, that's where Viper saved the day in Windows, because I was just using Microsoft Security Essentials and it did not stop that from happening. So in most cases, people have to reformat their computer. So it's weird we put all the security software on and there's still things that can get past it.
That's right. If you have to reformat your computer, you might lose all those iTunes music downloads that you had. And as of right now, you actually cannot re-download those songs without having to pay for them again. But Apple is in the midst of negotiating with the larger record companies to ensure that people can re-download music much in the same way that you would for an app that you once purchased.
Yeah, and of course, this is probably helping them with their goal of trying to promote music purchased or stored in the cloud, which is a strategy they'd like to roll out, or just to deal with the requests from individuals who are asking to re-download the purchase of their music or TV programs. So hopefully the record companies won't think it's some way that people can scam them, because really, if we purchased it, we should be able to get it again, especially the way iTunes works and how things can be removed from your iOS device just because you make the mistake of syncing with another computer. A new patent filed by Apple with the USPTO, that's the United States Patent and Trademark Office, is called the External Content Transformation. And its goal is to be used in classrooms to designate the different computers receive either different font styles or text-to-speech or Braille based on how those machines are set. So Apple, again, really wanting to make sure they have a stronghold in the classroom by getting this in place. True 508 compliance.
This is kind of neat because now as a presenter, you don't really have to think about how you've designed your content. I mean, you do to some extent, but if you have a group of people with all sorts of different needs, you might have had to prepare something for each of those people before now. But this patent aims to do that stuff on the fly, where you as the presenter have your content and then it's delivered to each of your attendees in a way that works well for them. And it doesn't matter, you know, some people need large fonts, some people don't care. You'll get what you need without having to think about what the rest of the class, you know, how they get their content delivered.
Well, Ricky, you and I, along with Sandy Ploton with CSUN, were guests on Accessibility Unlimited on KPFK in Los Angeles, as well as 93.7 in San Diego and a couple other FM channels they have out there. That was back on March 8th. That was good times on a stick, but it was cool to be on mainstream radio and
absolutely
talk about a variety of issues. And we have the segment, the last half, the last 30 minutes that where you and I participated, and folks can hear that either via iBlink or over at Serotalk, of course, on SamNet as well.
We've had some really great tech chats lately. Steve Sazen and Randy Rusnak were guests for the This Month in AT show, and that's Tech Chat 92. We also just did Tech Chat 93, all about Android, and we had Android Anna as a guest, and we also had...
Actually, it's Access Anna.
Oh, Access Anna,
That was my mistake, but also Robert Carter joined us on Tech Chat 92, but yes, Access Anna, Joe Steinkamp, and JJ Meadow joined us for Tech Chat 93. Plus, we had an interview with Caroline with Code Factory, and she announced first, we got the exclusive, they announced their intention to open up the...
mobile accessibility... SDK.
Framework. The SDK and the framework for third-party developers. So that's some very exciting news. So, Joe, you were actually involved in the beta team. I guess they had like 60 people, even though they originally wanted 30. So you said it was a very exciting beta, a little heated at times, but a lot of good input and actually really helped shape the product, which is exciting.
It was a very enjoyable beta. I really enjoyed the time. It was very congenial. People helped each other. Android is a little confusing to learn at first, and just like someone starting to learn a PC, and people were very good at helping one another out to learn certain terms or certain behaviors. But moreover than that, the software that Code Factory is releasing for the Android, which I just so happen to have over here next to me, is actually very helpful, and it is really good at giving you the ability to do some things quickly, because sometimes on the phone, it's hard to find where you want to go and what you want to do. This suite of products is really good at being able to help with just that. And it's 10 certain things right here. So I have phone, I have SMS, I have kind of a where am I, which you can use to see where you are if you can't get to things quickly through GPS. Using the browser, though, is the most important part of this product. Now, there is another browser out there from Ideal that is usable, but the ability to use a hardware keyboard and be able to have quick navigation links and jump from place to place to place, like Edit Field and other navigation that we're used to in QuickNav on screen readers, is paramount here, and that is really worth the price of admission. Currently, you can download this product for 30 days from the Android market. It's available on the US and the UK store. There are plans to release this for other languages as they go forward, but it's going to take some translation time, but it's definitely a worthy product, and I would tell people to go out there if they have an Android phone to try it out, because even if you don't have a hardware keyboard, now you can use the touchscreen within the mobile accessibility suite and even type with a virtual keyboard. So definitely good stuff, and I advise everybody to go out and check it out for themselves. Great demos out there on Blind Cool Tech List from Mike Arrigo and Carlos Palomino, and JJ and Anna both have demos as well.
What I was amazed about as I was participating or listening to the tech chat was that so many people in so many different ways kept asking, why should I go to the Android platform when iOS devices are fully accessible? And then I look at things like the fact that Android has just overtaken BlackBerry as the top smartphone platform in the US. And it makes me realize we can't ignore it. You know, if we don't choose this for ourselves, we still can't say, well, one company is taking care of this, so I don't really have to worry about it anymore. The fact that Android has become so popular, it's going to show up in corporate settings. You know, say you're not on AT&T or Verizon. Say you don't want to pay $200 or $300 to get an iOS device on a contract. Maybe you just want to get a free phone or pay a penny for one or whatever. Android is definitely a platform that we can't ignore, whether we want to use it personally or not. It's something that we really have to keep in our consciousness and push for additional accessibility. And I think that Code Factory has made a really nice start in that direction.
That's right. Code Factory is reinventing themselves. And I think that's what you're going to see in the next couple of years. Some companies that many people come to know and love falling by the wayside, and a few reinventing themselves, coming out with new products. The beta testers have basically shared their favorite phones, their favorite Android phones, and you can go read that list. We link to it at Cero Talk. So they mentioned a few things you want to keep in mind, like choosing a phone with the four-way navigation control, like a trackball or what they call the D-pad or kind of a directional pad. And if you type a lot, of course, choosing a QWERTY keyboard. Yes, in Android, that is an option. So you can read more over at CeroTalk.com. Very exciting news. This is really going to help a lot. J.J. Meadow, who you may know best for blindbargains.com and atguys.com, he has launched androidaccess.net. It is the Android equivalent of applevis.com, but it's specifically for Android apps, accessible Android apps. And it includes the categories of all free apps, paid apps, recent apps, and many other categories. So he's done a great job on that. It's only been out, as we record this, about 4 days. He's already getting a lot of input. And, of course, you can sign up and post your own apps, because it really does take the community, because there's no way of knowing until some of us test them. And they never all get tested. So that, I think, is going to make a big difference. But going beyond note takers, Level Star, they have announced the Orion SmartBook based on Android, and they're partnering with APH and Ivona to accomplish this.
They're going to have a version with an 18-cell Braille display and one without. No pricing information has been released as of yet. There is the potential for this to really go beyond a note taker. You're not going to have a closed platform, and I hope they make it such that you can install other apps for tablets that you might get from the market. You can run those things on this particular device. And I'm sure that it comes by default with standard note-taking features and such. But I'm interested in pricing, and I'm interested to see how open they make this thing.
I think we're looking at the gold rush here. I said this in Tech Chat, and I'll say it again. I think we're about to see a wide expanse on the Google platform for what Michael talked about just a moment ago, about the openness and the ability to modify things. That's one of the things about Android. It's great is that it's very flexible. And I think we're about to just see the tip of the iceberg here.
Well, it is a constant evolution. I mean, even in our interview with Code Factory, they said that they couldn't support Braille displays, and here they're coming out with an 18-cell. Of course, Level Star will be at booth 523 and APH at booth 700 if you happen to hear this before attending CSUN. So we will certainly be dropping by and checking that device out and giving you an interview. I'll see what they have to show at the event. But with open source comes open ports. I know folks hate it when I say that, but 50 Android apps were recently found to be containing malware. There's a good article that talks about what those apps were and how to remove them from your phone.
Code Factory is really busy these days. Not only have they released mobile accessibility, but they have released a piece of software to make digital television accessible. Now, this is only available right now in Germany, France, and Spain, but you're able to use this piece of software along with a TV tuner card and an antenna that you would typically have with one of these cards, and you'll get text-to-speech using the a cappella Heather voice to read any text that is available. So, for example, if you're going through menus, it's going to read those things to you. If there is program information at the bottom of the screen, it's going to read that to you as well. So this is exciting for folks in France, Germany, and Spain.
Well, and I look forward to that coming to the U.S. at some point, even setup menus, complete guides, info on the TV shows. You must use a computer keyboard, so perhaps a wireless keyboard would be good for that. Also access to channel and volume up and down, teletext or EPG, electronic program guides, and you can record shows and much more. Now, Ricky, I use something like this called Beyond TV. It was a $69 program. You know, I can get the program guides and I can program shows, but it's all done through the web browser, and a lot of the basic controls aren't accessible. Now, any of this software that you do only works with a specific group of media cards. And one thing I saw is a lot of theirs were USB sticks. I'm under the impression that USB sticks really aren't good for HD TV because you need some kind of onboard processor to really make that work. So maybe they've improved those and that's no longer the case. But I'm very excited about it. This is something I will spend the money on. So Hopage and Avermedia, you know, but you have to look at the list of specific cards that are supported. Well, how many of you remember the first talking calculator? I'm talking 1976. This bad boy sold for $345. I used to play around with it in high school a little bit.
Just wow, was my it really that expensive?
Yeah, it was $340. I think it was $395, and you could get it for $345. That was a big deal. In the demo, they didn't have it say what I used to make it do all the time. Overflow.
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 What's amusing to me about this is that I didn't get to play with a calculator like this until probably 1984 or 85, and the speech in the thing hadn't really changed that dramatically. I think the price had, and it might have been a bit smaller, but it sounded very much the same. If you want to hear what this thing sounded like, or if you already know and you just want to hear it for nostalgia's sake, you can check out the show notes at saratalk.com and listen to your heart's content.
Yeah, that thing could only do add, subtract, multiply, and divide up to 8-digit numbers. That was about it. So we've really come a long way. NVDA announces the release of 2011.1, and they are also SourceForge's Project of the Month for March. SourceForge is a tool for open source and free software out there, so I find myself over there every now and then. Computers are catching up with CAPTCHA. Interesting story, because what they're talking about here, Ricky, is that computers are getting so good at figuring out that websites have to make the letters harder to read, and it's gotten to a point that it's confusing even sighted people because they're making the letters all squiggly and wiggly.
Yeah, so, people are questioning their humanity. You know, am I human? I couldn't do this. Could I possibly be a replicant? People really are having a hard time with this. So at what point do things get so difficult in the race to keep computers from creating all these spam accounts and so on? At what point do they become not a viable solution for the humans either? There's still, obviously, you know, I don't want to get on too big of a soapbox about CAPTCHA, but even with the blind population, we have audio alternatives. Those seem to be getting harder and harder to understand. And of course, they completely exclude the deafblind. So I don't think that we've found a long-term workable solution for anybody.
No, because if you think about it, you have, first off, I saw one site that said, tell us the answer to what is 12 plus 6. I thought, well, that makes sense, you know. Are they going to be able to automate that? But you have picture identification, and of course, as we've found, there's so much of that crowdsourcing that even that, I think, could be circumvented. So I'll be really curious to see what technology they could find to prevent automated means to create accounts used for a variety of nefarious purposes. That's why we bring it up, though, because as annoying as CAPTCHAs are, they could become even more complicated. And then we talked about Amazon and what they're doing in that space. Well, a new device gives sight to the blind, kind of, sort of.
A little bit.
A new retina replacement device transmits light impulses to small electrodes implanted where damaged retinas used to be. Already been approved in Europe, and the FDA is considering approving it for the States. You basically wear a pair of glasses that send 60 points of light, ultimately.
And that's as compared to, what is it, 4 million that a general sighted person would have?
Right. So it's going to be a pretty blurred image, but if it helps you detect the presence of certain things. And it only costs a mere meager $100,000.
Hey, I've got them. Wait, no, I don't. Although somebody in Nigeria just told me that I do have $1 million waiting, so maybe I could check this out.
Well, just log into your online bank and find out, because AFB is conducting a survey to find out how many people are using online banking, and they want to know your success and failures with that, which banks prove to be better or worse in terms of accessibility. You can read that over at serotalk.com.
The survey is really short and easy to take, so I would definitely recommend that you do so. I'm very lucky in that my banking site is accessible. They do provide things in alternative formats without having to jump through really too many hoops at all. But not everybody is so lucky, and I think that needs to be shared. So go on over and take the survey.
A few things in good old Windows, Microsoft land. First, we have two articles on Windows 7 SP1, the recent service pack. One tells you how to fix a failing installation that can happen, I think, with a particular antivirus software is running. Also, the other article shows you how to free up 920 meg of disk space afterward, of files that are just left behind. By the time you hear this podcast, Microsoft will have released Internet Explorer 9, IE 9, of course that is for Vista and Windows 7, but not XP. Basically, looks like 9 a.m. Pacific time, and that comes from Mary Jo Foley, a very accredited, reliable source on Microsoft stuff. Well, we think we have it bad for audio-described content, but Netflix is very concerned and working on making much more of their content accessible to the deaf community.
There are a couple of options that have been used before now where you have a sort of automated captioning service that tries to go on voice recognition and do real-time captioning. And it can either be very bad or, at the very least, really hilarious, but not necessarily very accurate. I forget what the numbers were. I believe it was maybe 3 or 4% of the content on Netflix is actually captioned. And so you could be watching a video and sort of having to make up dialogue because there's nothing there to tell you what's going on. But Netflix says it is working on this.
And I didn't know there's a open source project YouTube has right now called SRT files you can upload with captions. So maybe we could actually have audio described or text captioned videos on YouTube. That's something to ponder and play with. The FCC, that's the Federal Communications Commission in the U.S., has published a text file on their proposed described video for U.S. television stations. And right now it looks like that's the top 25 markets where it's really mandated. The FCC is also seeking comments on video relay services, or VRS, using off-the-shelf technologies like Skype or Apple's FaceTime. That's a really good idea if you think about it. If you could
Absolutely.
Actually have... You know, a deaf person could just use Skype and get assistance.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are hoping that a lot of money can be saved not having to purchase specialized devices when something off the shelf would work at least equally well.
While we blind folks love our audio podcasting, what about video? We do live in a sighted world, and an article entitled Five Free Tools for Creating Screencasts talks about how to add screenshots and show other content to really promote your software or whatever it is you're trying to demonstrate. So by all means, go read the article at serotalk.com, try them out, and let us know which of these fine free programs do be accessible. The Department of Labor has created a web toolkit to help federal agencies increase employment of people with disabilities. And, of course, there's something called 13548 that mandates that more disabled people be hired by the federal government. And that will be a big thing at CSUN, including the keynote presentation. an interesting article entitled White House Internship Experience from a Disabled Person's Perspective. I didn't realize that. You know, I never even thought about disabled people doing internships at the White House, but they also provide a link. If you're interested, it's something you can apply for now. A segment on the recent NFB Blind Driver Challenge aired on the Today Show, and you can watch that via MSNBC.
You can also check out a video of the Google self-driving car. It's got people riding in it. I wish for described video on this one, because if you listen to it, it sounds like there are screeching tires and just pretty much all the way through the video. But then at the end, they say they only got up to about 44 miles per hour. As I was listening to the sound of it, I was thinking, okay, I wouldn't need coffee if I were riding in this car, because the adrenaline would definitely be going, but it may have looked a lot different than it sounded.
Well, yes, there was no audio description, but you can certainly hear some fast starts and stops, you know, very quick acceleration, very sharp turns. They were definitely proving that it was capable to turn on a dime, but I'd love to have some description of that. A new survey by students asks 10 questions to help them design a more appealing talking watch. We talked about that last week, a Braille watch, but if you want the old school talking watch, you can put in your 2 cents or maybe 20 cents answering each of these 10 questions. It shouldn't take too long. And a diabetic man wakes up to find that a dog ate 3 of his toes, part of his foot. Ouch. Woke up and just part of his foot was gone. I think interesting is that it said that there was no reprimand or should be no reprimand for the dog. The dog didn't do it to hurt him. The dog was just trying to remove dead flesh. I mean,
yeah, I think he was actually trying to help the guy. I mean, you only snack on the ones you love, I guess. But he smelled this dead tissue and wanted it gone.
Yeah, we got some reverb on that, Mr. Engineer.
You only snack on the ones you love.
Yes.
And that dog is up for adoption, guys.
If you too have dead tissue, you wish to be. Okay, never mind. Let's move on.
A new study shows that technology may inhibit your sleep, especially using laptops and cell phones before bed is bad.
If you text in the bed, you're bad, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
That's what we have. Interviews coming up here, and we hope you enjoyed it. Hope to meet some of you at CSUN. It's one of my favorite things to do is meet people who actually listen to the stuff that we do.
But before we go, let's talk about the Blind Cafe. This is another one of these dining in the dark sort of things. And I always think of the Bruce Springsteen Dancing in the Dark song, and I think somebody should maybe do a parody. But basically, they have gotten a blind chef, and they're getting blind and sighted people together in a pitch black room. And this is actually happening for 3 days, I believe. They're serving vegetarian, gluten-free meals that people have to eat without any visibility in the room at all. And I think this is interesting, but you know, I always wanted to see them do something like, I had this dish one time and it was fettuccine with seafood and the tails were still on the shrimp. There were other types of seafood that were actually still inside the shell, and it was all mixed into this pasta with sauce. Now, I want to see a sighted person who's eating in the dark for the first time tackle that one.
Yeah, and them long noodles.
Yes.
Oh, I have a story. So when I first joined vocational rehabilitation, they had these things where you would go in and put on a blindfold, and it was blindfold initiative training, or BIT. And the first time I ever walked into one of these things, they were listening to Field of Dreams audio described and eating pizza. And I turned to my supervisor and said, that's not what it's like to be blind. And she goes, well, what would you recommend? And I said, okay, next week what we'll do is we'll have all the people dress up in white and we'll bring them in. We'll have spaghetti and peas, you know, and see what happens. And afterwards they can take the blindfolds off and see how well they did, you know. And then we're going to listen to Terminator 2 Undescribed, just so you know. That's what this reminds me of is, you know, it's a great way of breaking things down and allowing individuals to, you know, experience what we all experience all the time.
Do you eat like I do? Oh, folks, that's what we've got from here. Join us at CSUN if you happen to be attending and hear this beforehand. We're at booth 820 and great tech chats March 24th. Our CSUN highlights with folks who are actually there.
Bye.
Well, we promised a few weeks ago a review of some different options for speakers, both Bluetooth and wired. Of course, all the Bluetooth also have an option to plug in a mini or eighth inch or 3.5 millimeter jack. But we started with four and now we're up to six. Mike Cavill gets to buy all these toys. Company expense. The accountant's got to love you. But we're going to go through these. We're going to start actually with the more expensive Bluetooth units, and then we're going to show you some lesser expensive items everywhere today in price range from $15 up to about $200. But I want to start with one that we reviewed before and some folks have purchased, but they've come out with a newer version of it, and that being the Fox L2.
The Fox L was given to us. We did not buy it. The price on the Bluetooth speakers, they tend to range between $150 and $200, depending on what you buy, depending on where you find them. The Fox L2 comes in at $169, and it's a little bit cheaper than the next one we're going to talk about. It is a very nicely built piece, and because it's got Bluetooth, Bluetooth is not just Bluetooth for voice in these systems. Bluetooth is actual stereo, very nice, clean stereo, no breakup. You can take the speaker, if you want to, up to 33 feet away from your Bluetooth device, be it your iPad or your iPod or your iPhone. I have not noticed any degradation in direct connect versus Bluetooth in battery life either, whether I'm using Bluetooth or whether I'm using the wired connection. Battery life in this particular unit, about 6 hours of use.
Okay, so in addition to playing your music in stereo and listening to your audiobooks, you also have, at least on our first two units, speakerphone capabilities, right? So can you actually answer a call?
You can actually answer a call on the Fox L and the Jambox, and also the third product that we're going to talk about as well. And I'm going to talk about the Jambox and the Fox L because they're very similar. And I would say just at the outset, they run a very, very even parallel to first place for me. I like them both. I happen to prefer the Jambox for a couple of reasons, but the Fox L is a very well-built system. Now, before you tune out and say, well, Calvo likes the Jambox, so that's the one I like, don't take Calvo's word for it. Let's talk about some of the features and stuff on each one of these units.
Well, I think it's time we listen to the bad boys. The proof is in the audio pudding, so let's take a listen first to the Fox L2.
I'm going to play the same song because I'm from South Florida. Emilio Iglesias is from South Florida. I'm going to go ahead and celebrate his new song, Tonight I'm Loving You. This has the audio dynamic that will show you the bass and the highs and, you know, and all of that in these speakers. Here's the Fox L2 first.
I know you want me. So put it on me. Let's remove the space between me and you. Now rock your body. Oh, damn, I like the way that you move. So give it to me. Oh, 'cause I already know what you wanna do.
And as you can see, the Fox L has a nice sound to it. It has a number of drivers. Both of these speakers do, the Fox L and the next one we're going to talk about, the Jambox. The Fox L, I believe it has four or five drivers in it. Cool thing about the Fox L is that it has a little reflector kind of thing on the back that's a bass reflector that it uses the sound from the drivers to reflect off of this bass reflector. It sounds pretty nice. Now, the one thing I will say is that the separation is okay, get better separation from a pair of speakers, obviously, but this isn't too shabby. It's very nice. I'd connect it to my laptop if I wanted to listen to a Describe video or even to like my Victor Stream. And because of the Bluetooth, of course, it makes it very nice to be able to connect to my cell phone. I can answer calls. I can make calls out. The buttons bug me.
Yeah, you said while it feels nice in your hand, the buttons are very awkward.
They are. They're very small. They're kind of hard to find in certain cases, but I mean, they're not impossible to find. They are a little difficult to find. This particular version pairs up a lot easier than the original Fox L we reviewed in Serotalk, and the sound is a lot better. The original Fox L speaker was great when direct connected, but had a problem the way that it works on Bluetooth. It didn't sound good at all. This version does. Now, the only thing that I will say about both of these speakers is they tend to sound better when plugged into the wall. Okay, they both cut down on the power of the amplifier. you know, when you're on the road and you're running on Bluetooth. So there is a bit of a trade-off of plugging into your electrical outlet versus just keeping it on the battery.
It's not fidelity, it's strictly a volume issue?
Since they're built on filling a chamber with sound like the Fox L does, the sound quality does degrade a little bit. It's not worse, it's just lower.
And that's where Amazon is your friend, because you can try all these bad boys out. Let's talk about the Jambox speaker. You say it has better bass, so do we want to go ahead and give that a listen?
Sure.
I know you want me. I need it obvious that I want you to. So put it on me. Let's remove the space between me and you. Now rock your body. So give it to me, cause I already know what you wanna do.
Now as you hear, this one has a little bit better bass, and that may be because of this, the way that it's shaped. It also has a number of speakers in it, or of drivers in it, and it tends to be, but it's a kind of a rectangle-ish shape to it, while the Fox L it's a real nice shape to it. You can tell that a lot of engineering time went into the Fox L. Not saying that engineering time didn't go into the Jambox, it's just the Jambox is just not exciting to touch. That being said, though, the Jambox has some pretty cool features in it. It has voice, and here you go. Here's what the voice sounds like.
Battery is about 3/4 full.
Let's see what else we got. Plugging in the charger.
Charging.
The reason that it talks is because they've brought over the technology from the Jawbone headsets. The people that make the Jambox are the manufacturers of the Jawbone headsets, which are very popular. And you all may remember the podcast where I was sticking my head out the window talking to you from the highway.
Yeah, great noise cancellation.
And they've brought that same technology to this speaker and to the speakerphone in it. It is a very cool product. The buttons on this one are easy to remember, and they also have shapes on them. So when you want to turn up the volume, you hit the plus, which is a little cross. And when you turn it down, it's a little minus, you know, it's a little stick. And it's just very easy to use this speaker. It gives you better battery life as well. You're getting 10 hours out of this thing as opposed to 6 out of the Fox L 2. It is a little bit bulkier than the Fox L in a number of things. In price, of course, it's $199 versus $169. If the $30 makes a difference to you. It is a little chunkier in battery life. You get 10 hours versus 6 hours. It's a little bassier, but it is a little bigger. Before we leave these two speakers, Michael, I would make a strong suggestion that, as you said before, if you are an Amazon customer, and they don't get mad when you do this, people, order both speakers, A/B them, listen to them, and see, because they're so close, and they're great products, both of them. As a consumer, the Fox L 2 people are just wonderful. I saw them at CES. They remembered our podcast. They remembered the fact that you, the blind consumer, bought from them and have called with interesting feedback and good questions. They were very, very nice and very supportive of us as a community and of the podcast. Jawbone, on the other hand, it's a bigger company. The one time I had to call Jawbone for technical support when I had problems with my Bluetooth headset, their customer service as well was very nice. I did buy the product on Amazon, so I'd never dealt with them in the purchase process. The product was nice, the packaging was nice, and I would really look at both of these speakers together before I made a decision on either one.
Now, if you want something more affordable, we have the Satechi Bluetooth Wireless. However, it may be a case of you get what you pay for, $39, but if you're willing to live with the compromises and want that portability of Bluetooth so that you're not tethered to the device, start with an audio sample. Let's see what we get for $39 in Bluetooth.
I know you want me. I need it obvious that I want you to. So put it on me. Let's remove the space between me.
Well, that was connected, Michael. Now, here's the really, really sad part. Now we're going to connect it via Bluetooth.
I know you want me. I need it obvious that I want you to. So put it on me. Let's remove the space between me and you.
Now, unfortunately, the statement that you made before about the convenience of Bluetooth away from your device just kind of I appreciate your political correctness in affordable. I would venture to say cheap. I ran across this. I tweeted it. People said, oh, you know, would you review it? I didn't plan on reviewing it. Quite honestly, after reviewing this thing, it's just not worth the money you pay for it. The people at the company now, they were very cool. I talked to a great manager over there. He was very receptive. I needed an accessible manual because I didn't have a PDF manual. By the way, there are PDF manuals available for both the other products. For this one, there was not available on the website. However, he did email it to me and he promised me that by the time this hit the street, that there would be a copy of the manual in the accessible PDF format on the website. And trust me that out of all these speakers, you're going to need the manual for this one because it is rather convoluted.
Yeah, you said it's not the most blind friendly. Again, very small buttons on three of the four corners, but even the fourth corner is something that feels like a button and it's not.
Nope. The other thing is that the way you turn this thing on, you kind of twist it really weird. There's a speaker that we're going to talk about later called the Orbit that you do the same thing, but the Orbit, it's clear as to how you're supposed to turn it on and off because you just twist the outside kind of the ring around the speaker. This kind of has this weird feeling to it. It took me a long time to figure out how the heck to turn this thing on. Then the challenge was getting it to pair. And then on top of that, then I finally realized that, oh, wait a minute, this thing has this funky design that you push in on the speaker, you twist it, and it kind of pops up like a jack-in-the-box on a little spring, which actually creates a port underneath the speaker, which gives it a reflective surface, which is why we got, you know, some of the bottom end out of this that we did. I am not happy with the speaker at all. As a direct connect, it's okay. But as you'll see in a moment, for direct connect, you can get a whole lot more bang for your buck. The Bluetooth on the phone side, you can't make a phone call properly. It doesn't work well as a speakerphone. It's just an incomplete product. And I think that they needed to polish it up a little bit more before putting it out to market. So sorry, guys.
Let's move on to the three products that do require a wired connection. Let's start with the least expensive, but you said has a pretty good output in terms of volume. And that's the iHome
Hamburger
speaker.
This hamburger speaker, it is the weirdest thing to describe to a blind person. When somebody puts it in your hand, it feels like a little hamburger. When you twist it, the top and the bottom half of the hamburger kind of split apart. They kind of bounce up and there's a spring in between them, which creates a port. And when you do that, you get some really nice sound. And this is what it sounds like.
Welcome to Zero Talk Podcast 62 from March 1st, 2011. This is Michael Off.
I'm Ricky Inger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp. I know you want me. I made it obvious that I want you to. So put it on me.
Let's remove the space between me and you. So as you see, we don't have the bass that we do in the other speakers, but man, it really does sound pretty good. I mean, we're obviously controlling the volumes and all that stuff for recording, but let me tell you, this little speaker, if you're using it with a Victor Stream, if you're using it with an iPhone or an iPad or little MP3 players, it really cranks. And the battery life on it is a rechargeable battery. It takes about 3 hours to charge, and you get about 10 hours of playtime out of this thing. As you so aptly pointed out in the pre-show, Michael, it does depend on how loud you're running this thing. But I mean, I'm not blasting away this little speaker. It would actually hurt my ears. It fits in your bag real comfy. It's clean. It's understandable. And it's great for podcasts. And at between $15 and $20, you can't beat this thing. You really can't. And you can find them on Amazon.
Maybe have a little hearing loss. The great volume output and the affordable price, $15 to $20, might make this one worth serious consideration. But next is the Altec Lansing Orbit.
Three AAA batteries. It's very nice. It's got nice sound to it. You pick them up for about $30. Originally sold for $49.95. For about $30, it's not bad. It's a mono speaker. You're not going to hate your $30 investment, but you're not going to feel like you got a heck of a deal either.
Right, because there's no recharging capability, so you're always toting around some extra AAA batteries, and it needs three to make it happen. So,
well, let me play it for you, and you can tell me what you think.
I know you want me. So put it on me. Let's remove the space between me and you.
A little fuller sound than the iHome, so that's a factor. You want to spend 30 for this as opposed to 15 or 20.
Yeah, the thing I don't like about it, though, also, Michael, is the connector on it. It kind of wraps around the unit. You kind of unwrap it, and you've got this about 4-inch long or 5-inch long cable that you then plug into your device. What I have noticed is if I put it too close to my iPhone sometimes, it'll give me that wonderful noise that you get from iPhones every once in a while when they're transmitting. If you've got a cable that's attached like that, if it gets damaged, if you damage the jack, and that certainly does happen to these things, you can't replace the cable, so you got to throw the speaker out.
Now, our final option here, and one that you really like, is the Wowee.
Oh, dude, and you know, it lives up to its name. Wowee!
First, I'm going to just put it on the surface with no bottom to it.
So as you see, there's not really much there.
I know you want me. I need it obvious that I want you to.
If I pick it up,
so put it on me.
That's what it sounds like that.
Let's remove the space.
Now, right next to the microphone, I have a surface that I can put it on top of, and watch the difference in the sound. Here we go. If I move it around a little bit, that's on top of one surface. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to put it on the right next to the microphone, and I know it's going to be a little distorted and stuff, but I want you to hear how much this thing rumbles. As you see, it really does sound good. I love this thing. It's awesome.
Wow, pretty good sound for its price, but it has an interesting dynamic that you have to explain to people.
The differences are amazing. The reason, Michael, is because this speaker uses the surface that you're on as kind of a reflective surface. If you set it down on top of a desk or a cabinet of some kind that's kind of hollow underneath, it'll use that surface to enhance the sound. And it's just geeky fun to go with the speaker connected to your phone or to your iPod or whatever, and just take it and put it on top of different stuff to see what it sounds like. The other day I was with the guy I work out with. I took out the Wowee speaker and I just set it on top of his SUV with my iPhone and just started playing music. And it was amazing. It sounded like his regular car stereo because it was using the actual roof as a reflective surface to enhance the sound. The bottom of the speaker feels kind of rubbery, and it is a piece of rubber that somebody pointed out to me. You need to wipe it off occasionally so that it grips well. It grips the surface of whatever it's on and tries to reflect off of that, which is why it sounded different when I was holding it in my hand. If you want it to sound the same every single place you put it, this isn't the speaker for you. Go back to the Foxcell, go back to the Jambox. That's the way you want to go. But this particular product at $79, at 20 hours of battery life, and at some of the most amazing sound I have ever heard out of a speaker of this design, this has got to be my number one choice. And this is what my research has shown me. So I hope it's helped everybody. All this stuff is available from Amazon.com. There's links to it in our show notes. Please do feel free to drop us a line if you have any questions, and I'll do my very best to either answer them here or give the answers to the crew here, and they can answer them for you.
Resources at Serotalk.com is the email address. You gave us the best demo, and that's an audio sample. And we did our best to give that to you as realistically as possible. Of course, captured with microphones and compressed into an MP3 audio file. But I think it does give you a feel for the sound quality of each speaker. So we hope you found this enjoyable and useful, and we welcome your comments and suggestions for future product reviews. Thank you, Mikey.
All right, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, g'day, Serotech listeners. This is Scott Rutkowski from Sydney, Australia. And today I wanted to talk a bit about and demo the new iVote system for the elections here in Australia. Basically, this particular system has been built for people who are blind or visually impaired or live more than 20 kilometres away from a polling place. The Australian Electoral Commission decided that they wanted to make voting easier for those who are unable to use the ballot paper and required assistance to vote. So what they've done is they've implemented two ways of voting. You can go to their website, which is just www.ivote.nsw.gov.au. At the moment, this particular system hasn't been used for anyone to vote with. It's going to be trialled for the first time on March the 26th for anyone who lives in New South Wales, and they can vote in the state election for the first time with the iVote system. Anybody else can go to the website and have a look at it, but you can't actually vote or anything, obviously, because you're not an Australian citizen. The other thing you can also do is for anyone overseas who's based in New South Wales who needs to vote, can actually vote using the system. The way it determines whether you're eligible to vote is when you go to the registration page at the website I've given, it asks you to put in your name and your address, and it checks the electoral roll to see whether you're eligible to vote. And if your name is on the roll and you have voted previously, you are allowed to use the system to vote. They do say that if you register and you don't fit the criteria to vote, that you may be imprisoned or fined. The other thing too is that if you do not vote in the election at all, either by going to the polling place to vote or using the system, you will be fined. The fine, last time I remember hearing, was around about $150 because of the fact that you didn't vote. When you register, either via phone and speak to an agent or via the website, they give you an 8-digit number. You use this particular number to log into the system to vote via phone or via the website. And you also have to choose a 6-digit PIN as well. And you go in there, and I'm going to demo this shortly. You use your 8 and 2 keys to move up and down the choices, kind of like your up and down arrows on your computer. At the end of your voting process, it'll tell you here's a 12-digit receipt number which you need to make a note of, because on the 28th, after the actual election has been, or the people have gone to vote, I should say, you have to dial back in or go to the website on the 28th and actually make sure your vote was counted, because if it wasn't, you need to ring the Australian Electoral Commission and tell them that you use the iVote system and for some reason your vote was not validated. We're going to dial into the system now and have a listen to what it's like. What's the number? Here we go. Here we go. Let's check it out here.
Welcome to iVote. For the 2011 New South Wales State General Election, iVote enables people with disabilities, those who experience difficulties reading, people who live more than 20 kilometres from a polling place, and people who are interstate or overseas to cast their vote by phone or over the internet. Please select one of the following options. iVote registrations close on the 23rd of March. To register for iVote, please press 1. Or to practice using iVote by phone, press 3. If you need help with iVote, press 4. If you have a general voting inquiry, please press 5. To provide feedback on your iVote experience,
so I'm going to press number 3 to try the practicing system.
Welcome to iVote by phone, a demonstration version of the accessible voting system where you can practice voting using the phone. All candidates and party names are fictitious, and all details of this demonstration voting session will be discarded at the end of this call. To log into the system, you will need to enter an 8-digit iVote number and a 6-digit PIN. For the demonstration session, the iVote number you need to enter is 1234-5678. The PIN number you need to enter is 123456. Please press 1 to continue.
So we'll press 1 to continue, and then we'll put in the 8-digit number that it requested.
Please enter the 8-digit demonstration iVote number, which is 1234-5678. Follow.
Then hit the pound.
Now please enter the 6-digit demonstration PIN,
which is...
We'll do that now. And here we go.
You are now successfully logged in to the iVote by Phone demonstration system. You can access a menu of additional commands from anywhere in the iVote system by pressing the star key. From this menu, you can go back one step, repeat the last message, pause the system for up to 5 minutes, clear all your preferences, change the speed of the voice, go to the ballot menu, or end this call. All of these options are available by pressing the star key at any time. If you want to increase the speed of the voice now, press star 5. You can hear help for iVote at any time by pressing the 0 key. To commence voting, press 1.
I'm going to do 1.
In iVote by phone, all candidates are announced in the order of first name and last name. In a moment, you'll be presented with 2 ballots, the Legislative Assembly ballot and the Legislative Council ballot. Legislative Assembly. You are now allocating your preferences for the Legislative Assembly ballot. This ballot is for the district of
Sydney Harbour
and contains 6 candidates which are listed vertically. To move down the list of candidates, press 8. Or to move up the list, press 2. When you hear the candidate's name of your choice, press 5 to allocate them a preference. You must allocate at least 1 preference in this ballot for your vote to count. To repeat these instructions, press star 1. To hear the first candidate, press 8.
So I'm going to press number 8 to hear the first candidate who we can vote for.
Jack Carpenter, Democratic Party, test.
To assign this candidate a preference, press 5.
So we'll keep going down.
Next candidate,
Marcus Skinner, Independent, test.
Go again.
To assign this candidate,
Anthony Tickle, Independent, test.
Go again.
To assign this,
Le Lion, Sandy, the Khaki Party, test.
I'll pick that one, so number 5 to give it a preference.
Preference 1.
Le Lion, Sandy, the Khaki Party, test.
To undo this preference, press 5. If you have finished allocating your preferences, press hash.
That'll do. I'll just press the pound key.
And continue. You have chosen to save your ballot for the Legislative Assembly using the demonstration iVote by phone service. The preferences you have selected are preference 1.
Le Lion, Sandy, the Khaki Party, test.
To save your ballot, press 1.
I'll do 1 now.
Press 2. Legislative Council. You are now at the Legislative Council ballot. You can select to vote either above the line by group or below the line by candidate. To vote above the line for one or more groups, please press 1.
Which I'm going to do.
To vote below the line for at least 15 of the 333 candidates, please press 2.
I'll do number 1.
To repeat it, above the line. You have opted to vote above the line for the Legislative Council. Groups in this ballot are arranged horizontally. Please note, some groups only have a group letter as their name. There are 18 groups arranged across this ballot. To move right, press 6. To move left, press 4.
I'm just going to press 6 now.
To assign a group.
Group.
This group does not have a name.
We'll go again.
Assign this group a...
Group B, the City Life Party, Spencer Davis Group, test.
Go again to near the next one.
Group a preference.
Group C, Australians for Advancement, test.
I'll keep going.
Assign this group...
Group D.
These candidates have no preference box.
I'll keep going.
The line.
Group E, Conservatives slash Country Party.
I'll keep going.
Group F.
This group does not
go
have
again.
A name.
Group G, Democratic Party, test.
I'll pick that one, number 5.
Preference 1.
Group G, Democratic Party, test.
To undo this preference, press 5. If you have finished allocating your preferences, press hash.
I'll just do that now.
This ballot. For help on your current activity, press 1. To be transferred to the iVote call centre, You have requested to be transferred.
Now, what should have happened was it would have said the same as before, where my vote preference has been saved. Do I want to press 1 to submit my votes, which I would do, and then it would just say, yeah, you've been submitted. In the live system, which we'll all get to use from the 14th, it'll actually give us a 12-digit receipt number at the end of the process, which we then have to go and check on the 28th of March after the election has been held, and then we'll be able to make sure that the vote was valid. So that's pretty much the demo of the iVote system, and I hope you all enjoyed listening to it.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.